the system this time. You're going to have ample opportunity to look at the summary of the tentative agreement, look at the Q&As as it moves forward. We're going to produce the entire memorandum of agreement. Just for people's information, that memorandum of agreement is 98 pages long. A lot of it is just because the articles are there. There might be, in some cases, a single article that's ends up being 6 pages long and there's only 2 changes in it. But we thought you needed to see the entire article and see what the changes were so that you would have all of the information in front of you. So the memorandum of agreement is 98 pages long. You will get the gist of most of it looking at the summary of the tentative agreement. But I think it's important that you guys have an opportunity to at least look at everything that's going to be changed in the collective agreement. For those that aren't aware, we asked the employer to go into negotiations in December of last year. They had stalled us. They said that they weren't ready. We were trying to push them to the table. We actually didn't get to the table with them the first time until April of 2022. By that time, our collective agreement had expired. We put on the table immediately that we were looking for retroactive. It didn't seem to be an issue, but we didn't have anything in writing that it would be, so we continued to progress in the negotiation process. We met with the employer, I want to say, 6 or 7 days back in the spring, and it came very clear to us that they really didn't have the mandate that we thought that we needed to have to move forward. PSAC, and I don't know if everybody's aware of that, but it's the Public Service Employer Council. Back in 1990s, the NDP government actually put it in to try to get a mandate to not have any labor disputes and what have you between the public service, and they put it in. When the Liberals came in, they kind of bastardized it a bit and made it an anti-union platform that they came after us. And I'm disappointed, quite frankly, that the NDP have maintained it after they saw how it was utilized with the opposition. But they have utilized it, and not always in our benefit. We've had several years of zeros, ones, twos, when inflation has been running higher than that. But in fairness to the whole process, if you go back over the last 20 years and add up all of the increases and what was done, we are pretty close to inflation until we get to now. From 1980 to current, inflation was pretty much kept in check in that 2 to 3% range in most cases, and sometimes less than that. The PSAC mandate, when we first started going into bargaining, was a 2, 3, and 2. And obviously that was not going to be sufficient. So the employer said to us, look, that's all the mandate we've got. We can't put anything more on the table. And the union took the position at that time, well, there's no point in us moving forward. We knew that there was a large movement afoot with the BCGU. They had 34,000 members, and they were saying this is not acceptable. We're not looking at this mandate. And they did move forward. They said we're successful in achieving a large mandate from their membership in the strike vote. They went back to the table. And in 20 plus years that I've been dealing with, since the 90s, that I've been dealing with PSAC, this is the first time I have ever seen them waver from the actual mandate they put down. Part of it was the pressure that I think the BCGU put on, but part of it was also, the very fact that it wasn't fair. They looked at what was happening when they put the mandate out. Inflation wasn't running to the extent that it all of a sudden took off to. And I think that they had sat back and said, we have to do something. BCGU was successful in achieving an agreement with a new mandate. That mandate is something that is applicable to all public service employers. And going to down from that is every single public service employee. The mandate that was successfully negotiated with BCGU was a flat 25% increase on all wages, and then a 3.24% effective April 1, 2022. When we didn't know for sure what the, when we didn't know what was happening with the BCGU and what was going to happen with the mandate, well, we made the conscientious decision to say we're going to put bargaining on hold, and we held out till September. When our September, we met again. They had not had their vote count yet, and we weren't sure what was going to happen with it, where it was going. And we made the conscientious decision to meet in November to try to conclude a collective agreement. BCGU, in the meantime, concluded the agreement. So did HSA, PSAC, and HSA and Health, one other one, I can't remember. They've been successful since then, working with, I believe, WorkSafe and ICBC, but the mandate has been the same. Unfortunately, these companies or these the government has allowed these unions to agree to a Me Too clause, which meant once we went to the table, not in all circumstance, but when it came to a general wage increase, if we got anything more than what was negotiated in the general wage increase with those other groups, they got it too. So it meant that we were no longer negotiating on behalf of the 1,960 members that we have at BC Hydro. In fact, we were negotiating for 380,000 public service employees in the province of British Columbia. We've taken the position, IBW has taken the position, that it's not free and fair collective bargaining. We know that it would take a Supreme Court challenge to get the law thrown out. I feel very comfortable to say that I think it would get thrown out. I believe it's unconstitutional. I believe it's against the labor code that says we have the right to free and fair collective bargaining. We have the right to strike, withdraw our services. This kind of takes a lot of that away when that's the mandate. That's the most you're going to get. Excuse me. We met with your employer, and we put together what we think is the best we can come up with. I can tell you we've, in addition to the general wage increase, which was kind of dictated to us, we put together a package, a financial package, as well as some wording in the collective agreement that I believe we were able to eke out some additional monies and additional benefits for the membership, something we haven't seen for a while. I've been on the bargaining committee for the last three agreements, and we've been unsuccessful in getting some of the things that we were successful in getting this time. So the term of the agreement is a three-year term from April 1st, 2022. And I should bring this up, when we agreed to postpone bargaining, we had the employer sign a letter that said the general wage increase would be fully retroactive to April 1 of 2022. So it's a three-year agreement from April 1 of 2022 to March 31st of 2025. The effective April 1, as I said, we have a flat rate increase of 25 cents per hour, and then you add a 3.24% increase to that wage. That is not keeping up with current inflation, but I can tell you that when we get to year two, which is almost here, almost upon us, in about another 3 months, we'll be back to April 1 and looking at the next increase. And it says it's a minimum of 5.5% to a maximum of 6.75%. That's based on a COLA clause. So Province of British Columbia cost of living allowance based from April 1 of 2022 to March 31st. Oh, sorry, it isn't April. It is March 1st of 2022 to February 28th of 2023. And whatever the cost of living increase will be on average for the 12-month period will be applied to the general wage increase. That has a guaranteed minimum of 5.5% to a maximum of 6.75%. Obviously, if it was a 5.5%, that means inflation is dropping down. That would probably be advantageous to us if inflation was probably running at 3.75 to 4.25. The 5.5 would mean we're going ahead. I would rather see it come out at the 6.75. So we can get the wage increase because we are starting to trend down in inflation. And I think by the time we get into 2024, we're going to see it dropping significantly from where it is today. If the government keeps on putting up interest rates, I'm not sure what that's going to do without the government cutting their program of funding capital projects and what have you, which is stimulating the economy and moving it forward as well. That's the second issue. Effective April 1st, 2024, we have an additional minimum of 2% to a maximum of 3%, again, based on the COLA clause from the previous year in 2023 going into 2024. I'd just like to say that we have been asking for health and welfare benefits for quite a while, many, many terms, and we have not been very successful in getting it. But I'm pleased to say that we moved a couple of things on the health and welfare. If an absence due to sickness exceeds 5 consecutive working days, you used to have 3 consecutive working days, they had the right to ask for a medical certificate. Now they can't do it unless you have 5 consecutive working days. Or if there is 4 separate absences. Now, we used to have 5 separate absences, and guys said, well, we took a rollback there. We didn't. If you look at, we have 3 consecutive working days and 5 absences. I gave you 15 days in the year, and now you got 5 consecutive working days with 4 absences, which gives you 20 working days in the year. We've beat up the employer pretty hard on this, saying, you know, with the way the medical system is today, trying to get to a doctor, trying to see things, to get into them, and what's the point in going to a clinic that doesn't know you? And in addition to that, there isn't a doctor alive that can say, I didn't have the runs yesterday. He doesn't know. It's ridiculous to be asking for these things unless you've got a real trouble child, and that's where they should be focusing their energies. We asked for an increase in the paramedical services to an annual maximum of $2,000. Excuse me. We were successful in getting effective the date of effective January 1, 2023, because you can't go retroactive in a calendar year. The increase of paramedical service to an annual maximum of $1,750 per calendar year, and effective January 21, 2025, that will be increased to a maximum of $2,000 per year. So that's $2,000 or $1,750 or $2,000, depending when you're applying. That you can spread out between your, you know, massage therapist, chiropractor, physiotherapy, all of the ones that are covered under, I think there's about 8 or 10 paramedicals that's covered under there. We also asked to increase eye exam reimbursement to $200 per family. If you have children that's under the age of 16, I believe that they are separate from that. They also have an eye exam up to $125, and that's per 12-month period. But this $200 is per family, and we had that's a significant increase from where we were at. We increased orthodontics to a lifetime maximum from $2,500 to $3,000 per year, and we increased mental health benefit to $2,750 per year per person. All of those benefits except for the $2,000 paramedical is effective January 1, 2023, and then the $2,000 is effective January 1, 2025. Apologize, I'm coughing. I've just been negotiated for about 20 hours on Thursday to Friday, and unfortunately we had 2 people on the employer side and a couple on our side that were all sick, and I've been sick since, so I apologize for the cough, and I'll try to make sure I turn my head away from the phone. Upon ratifications, so these are not fully retroactive, we managed to get some additional wage increase or wage adjustments. We heard from the foreman loud and clear last time. I think we had 1% on the table last time, that the rate difference between a subforeman and a foreman just isn't enough to attract the people for the extra job responsibility and duties and what have you. So we got an increase of 2% on the foreman's rate. We increased senior storekeeper and senior tool crib attendant by 2%. We've increased senior automotive and heavy vehicle parts person by 2%. Field storekeeper rate of pay will increase to $32.80, and the TNO rate of pay will increase to $55.96. For the TNOs, this was a situation where we had a 3.5% increase to the CPC tax 2 agreements ago, and you guys ended up falling behind. They refused to give you that rate increase, and it wouldn't have been. They've given it to the 10 people, but it was a result of the decoupling that was there. So you guys were coupled to the TTIs, the trades trainers instructors, and they were holding you back because if they gave the 10 people the increase, they had to give 60 trades trainers an increase. So we've decoupled that, but we also got an increase for the trades training instructors of 2% prior to the decoupling. And now they're standing on their own. So if the trades trainers are looking for an increase next time, we'll be negotiating on behalf of what their job duties and responsibilities are and what we feel the appropriate rate of pay should be for them. Fleet training safety trainer rate was also increased to 5108. This was a significant increase from where they're at. They were, if you look at the TTIs, and we tried to get him to the TTI rate because he's doing primarily the same type of work as the TTI. We weren't successful in getting the safety trainer position to that rate, but we were successful in getting it to the 5108. An additional 2% to the general wage increase, a one-time deal, will become effective data ratification for the CPC technologists, trades training instructors, the 2%. The area planner scheduler, we got an additional 2%. They also are being decoupled. They were coupled to a specific rate, and we've got a 2% added to theirs and then decoupled. The generation plant operator, and then basically everything that was in the vehicle garage got a 2% jump. They have had extreme difficulty trying to get people into those positions. We've heard from the mobile transport department for the last two agreements that they feel they're significantly behind. And we'd love to have gotten most of these positions more money if we could have. Unfortunately, we were limited because we had the general wage increase mandate. And anything else that you got, you were supposed to have to give something up for. I can tell you I've done a lot of negotiations. We've got a lot more money on the table here than the 0.25. So that's 0.5% that they said that we had to play with to increase some of the things that we were looking for. One of the things I think that I'm probably most happy about in the agreement is the meals and allowances that we were successful in getting. We have unfortunately let the meals sit at a specific rate for 4 or 5, 6, 10 years in the agreement, and then we're looking for a large jump. I think everybody got a notice today that the per diem was going to go up effective January 1 to $72. It's no secret we had on the table we were looking for $75. We met with the employer and we said, we're going to start putting that in the agreement so we can deal with it on a yearly basis. They've given us a letter and a commitment to say that it will be reviewed annually. They couldn't put in that it would be increased annually, but our direction that we were saying is we want it increased by the same wage percentages as what we've got in these other agreements. So the things that were in the collective agreement, the cooking out allowance, the $75, if we added on the 3.24, it came to about 77 and change. We got it bumped to 78, and then the increases, so the 6.5 to 6.75% will be applied in April 1 of 2023, and also the 2 to 3% in 2024. The increase to living out allowance from 130 to 153. This is a significant increase overall in the paperwork here, in the LOA. It's about 18% over the term of the agreement. It will bring it up from the 153 to $168.23 at the end of the agreement in 2025. So it will go from 153 to 163 in April, less than 3 months away. After the contract's been ratified, and 168.23 after that. The significance in what we're doing here on the living out allowances, we were successful. Oh, sorry, that's going to go up another $5 from that. So I forgot to add in the, so it'll be $173.23 on the final. In the last year of the agreement, we were successful in getting an additional $5 bump plus the general wage increase. In 2024 to take us into the 2025 agreement, so in the third year of the agreement. Beginning April 1, 2023, overtime meal limits of the 42 and 26 shall be increased by the general wage increases. So that is the 5.5 to 6.75. That 42 will become 44.84, and then it'll become 46.18 the following year. I'm sorry. The biggest, I think the biggest plus we have is anytime we've tried to adjust the waging, the meal allowances, it has been costed against us. So we'd say we want $5. They'd say, do you have any idea what you have to give up in the rest of the agreement to get this? We were successful this time in tying it to the general wage increases. It will not be costed against us from here on in. You will be guaranteed to get the general wage increase percentages. I am sorry. Just going to take a drink of water here. Sorry. We will be guaranteed to get the general wage increases percentages attached to the following meal allowances that I just talked about, meals and allowances. And we have the 72. So if we were to have put the wage, or not the wage, the per diem, if we were to put the per diem into the collective agreement, I'm sorry, I just got to grab a quick lozenge. Apologize, brothers and sisters. I'm still not back 100%. Okay. How do we? Oh goodness. Good job. So how do we put the $72 into the collective agreement, or if we were asking for $75, the employer would have costed the difference against us. So we would have had to make up somewhere else in the agreement, $21 a day. And so we felt that it was better to leave it outside of the agreement. We got a commitment from them to go to $72. And if we need to, in 2 years' time, we can put it back into the agreement and move forward from the 72. If they don't give us the rate that we're looking for, we'll only have it costed against us from 72 to whatever it is we're looking for. So it's a huge advantage. Oh, goodness. Choking to the... some of the other benefits that we were successful in getting, in addition to the meal allowances, is in maternity and parental leave. We're successful. You had the 16 weeks for maternity leave previously with the top-up. We got the 17 weeks. One of them became unpaid, but before when it said 16, it was one unpaid and 15 paid. But we finally got parental leave for either party to take, and that is 8 weeks top-up to the 85%. So provided you qualify for unemployment, which I think most people probably do at Hydro, but you apply for your unemployment, you get your 55% is what unemployment is, but it's capped at about $660, $670. That probably relates to about 45% for most guys, most people. And the company will now top up for that 8 weeks another 45% of your wage. That does come effective on date of ratification. I just want to say, if anybody had a spouse that had a baby this year, you would qualify, because when they go off on maternity leave, they can go off for 1 year. And you just have to take your parental leave within that 1 year period. So if your wife had a baby in March of 2022, you would be eligible in January to take it, but you have to take it prior to the year coming up in March. So anybody that had it, if they wanted to take the parental leave, could go off in January and get their 8 weeks in January, February, but prior to the birth date of the baby in March. So, and that would also apply to March or later in the year. They would qualify. If somebody had a baby in January or February, unfortunately, you wouldn't have the time to get the entire 8 weeks, but you got in, if you had a baby in February, you could maybe take 4 weeks off in January and get the top up. In Mica Creek, and you'll see when you get the whole memorandum, this is about six pages in Mica Creek, and the only increase was the remote incentive from 16 to 20%. Bridge River MOU, again, we increased food allowance from the $57.50 to the $59.80. Beginning April 1, 2023, it shall also be adjusted by the general wage increases that's been negotiated in the collective agreement. We increased the remote incentive from 16 to 20%. There was an article in the collective agreement that said there was a $38.46 biweekly compensation for lack of facilities in Bridge River. The letter said, in the opinion of Hydro, they could delete this at any time that they felt they had brought up the facilities. And as they said to us, there's boats and quads and gyms and gym equipment and what have you that are there. So they gave us a letter saying they would remove that, which was not negotiable, but they'd remove the $38.46 biweekly. But we got the remote incentive moved from 16 to 20% there. Construction services, temporary employees. We amended Article 34 to allow construction services to perform switching to facilitate storm restoration and to expedite service response in emergency situations when regular operations personnel are not readily available. We had a long discussion with the employer about this. We had we wanted to have what the definition of emergent situations were and when regular employee personnel are not readily available. We came to the conclusion that obviously in storm it's an emergent situation, but if it's an emergency situation where there's a main power line down, we had a crew there, somebody was in the area in construction services that are licensed and able to perform the switching, they could do that switch to get the power back up and running quicker. For those that aren't aware, we're currently using our contractors to do it anyway. I would much rather bring it in-house than have our contractors out there doing it, and they have the right to have the contractors do it today. We amended Article 25C to allow temporary employees, because at one point it said all regular employees are entitled to take a leave of absence. Now we've had all employees. On the apprentices and grads in holding and grads in holding, applying for positions will not be eligible to compete for bulletins and vacancies for a period of 12 months from the start date of the new position. And we increase living out allowance for apprentices attending training in MOU number 13. Next one is Article 13P. This is the helicopter transport. I want to just say that before we move on there, when we started bargaining, the employer gave the union three letters of estoppel. For those that don't know what a letter of estoppel means, it means they are ceasing a current practice that was not covered under the collective agreement, i.e., if they're paying people for working through their lunch for the last 2 years, contract doesn't say you get paid for working or for getting a paid lunch. Sorry, not working through your lunch, getting a paid lunch. They can give you a letter and say, we're no longer at the end of this agreement. We're ceasing to pay for lunches, and we'll rely on the language of the collective agreement. So we received three such letters at the beginning of bargaining. The first one is practice of paying premium for hoisting work. This letter is formal notice that following the expiry of the current collective agreement on March 31st, 2022, and commencing the effective date of a renewed collective agreement, BC Hydro will revert to the strict language of the collective agreement with respect to the payment of premiums under Article 13. In recent years, BC Hydro has been paying employees 8 hours of high time premium for hoisting work onto unstable plant like a tower and 4 hours high time premium for hoisting work onto stable plant ground. Effective the renewal of the collective agreement, BC Hydro will pay premiums under Article 13 only where the work performed meets the criteria set out in the collective agreement. In the employer's view, hoisting work falls within the criteria for the regular helicopter premium. That theoretically said they're ceasing the practice that they had. So we looked at it and said, well, we're not going to have our people do it for nothing. And we put together what we felt was the best we could get under the circumstances, because two times they just said, we're walking away from it. We're not going to give you anything. So we created a human external transport, HET, which is an employee who during the course of a day is assigned to work suspended outside the helicopter, e.g. hoisting, Class D. We've added platform and touch and go. Shall be paid a premium equal to 75% of their straight time wages for the time so worked, or a minimum of 4 hours, whichever is greater. So they get you, they're flying you out to, well, actually I'll let me finish this, and then I'll let Kenny explain it, because he knows it more intimately than I do. And then four says, nothing contained in 1, 2, or 3 above shall be construed or interpreted in such a manner that as to entitle an employee in any one day in respect to the use of a helicopter to claim a premium exceeding an amount equal to 75% of their straight time wages for any hour worked during that day. So the company has said you can claim more than one premium. And if you are, if you're hoisting, you can claim the one premium, and high time totally separate. You still get your high time if you're up on high time. But if you're flying in, you're also entitled to the 4 hours that you were entitled to under that part of the agreement. So do you want to explain that better than I can, Kenny?
I think you kind of nailed it, what the new language says. It's a 75% 4 hour minimum, cannot be combined at the same time as another helicopter premium. That is, like you say, the new language that was developed based on Hydro stance of not paying anything. As for high time associated with that premium, that still remains. It's just that they can't be. It's not what was previously being paid out as what wasn't in the agreement. So, Garnet, I'll pass it back to you if you want to carry on. And I'm sure we can take some calls on this. I'm sure there's going to be a few.
Rod had some examples as well, and maybe we'll get. So the employer also gave us another letter of estoppel, and it says quarterly vacation for lock keepers. This letter is formal notice that following the expiry of the current collective agreement on March 31st, commencing the effective date of the renewed collective agreement, BC Hydro will change its current practice and no longer provide quarterly vacation, QV, to those lock keepers who are not required to work or be available to work during lunch hours, as there's no obligation in the current collective agreement to do so. We fought this one. This is where they sent a letter of estoppel, but didn't have the right to. Collective agreement clearly says any shift worker is entitled to the QV unless they are specifically excluded from it, and lock keepers are not excluded anywhere in the agreement. The company has therefore withdrawn that letter of estoppel and will continue to pay the QV. The last letter that they sent us on the estoppel is annual vacation. This letter is formal notice that following the expiry of the current collective agreement on March 31st and commencing the effective date of the renewed collective agreement, BC Hydro will cease its current practice of allowing employees to bank unused vacation from year to year without restriction and without regard for their years of service. Effective the renewal date, we will revert to the strict language of the collective agreement in Clause 22B. Specifically, employees may accumulate all or a portion of their fourth, fifth, or sixth week of vacation from year to year and take the accumulation as added leave at any subsequent time subject to staffing requirements. So employees will only be permitted to bank vacation in accordance with this language The effect of reverting to the specific language of the clause will be as follows. Somebody with 3 weeks vacation, there's no banking. 4 weeks, you can bank one. 5 weeks, you can bank two. 6 weeks, you can bank three. They have said any unused vacation entitlement that cannot be banked will be paid out the following year. That's just language they put in. There's nothing in the collective agreement that says they have the right to do so. But I'll warn you guys, what the language does say is if somebody has not used actual 3 weeks of vacation time, the employer can force you onto vacation effective December 31st. So if you've got 2 weeks left, first 2 weeks of January, you're using up that vacation. So I think in a vast majority of the cases, people are taking more than 3 weeks off. They're trying to utilize other areas, banked overtime, et cetera, as their time, and keeping the bank vacation because you carry it forward. You make more money next year when the wage increases, when the wage increases. But the employer is saying they won't allow that to happen. So we'll probably be in a fight if they try to pay it out. Probably won't happen this year on the payout because the contract won't be ratified by that time. But next year, you can probably see them trying to do so. These letters of estoppel are legal. They unless we have specific language, and that's the problem we had with the helicopter premium. We didn't have the language. The language does lean towards the fact it's included in the job description, and therefore we had to put something in that would give our people something other than them just walking away from saying it doesn't affect them. So that was effective in both Article 49 for construction services as well as the regular workforce. Job classifications. We made changes to cable splicer. We got a name change to power cable technician. A field storekeeper, where applicable and necessary, will arrange for the maintenance of tools and perform minor repairs. The wage rate will be adjusted to match construction tool and material handler. We created a machine operator one position. There's a letter of understanding talking about it. That increased wage went to a GT1 wage rate. We've red circled anybody that doesn't have the craning certificate, and it gives them 6 months to bring it up to speed, or they just be paid a machine operator period rate. We expanded trades training instructor job description to include assessments and evaluations. We expanded the PLT job description to include installation and maintenance of distribution automation equipment, e.g. battery replacement, modem replacement, and power resets. The CPC text retained jurisdiction for this work. I think this one needs some explanation. The company is currently just entered into, what you're going to try to get out of, a contract for the entire province to contract out this work, the battery replacement, modem replacement, and power resets. Guys, it's our jurisdiction. We need to fight to keep that in-house. And if we've got PLTs on the job, at the pole, and it needs a reset, we got to go up and push the button. I don't want them sending out the CPC techs. Don't have the time to do this kind of work. Although we've asked that we retain jurisdiction for it because in some of the remote or outlying areas, they do have. So we're going to challenge them to say that it's their work and we want to do it. But in the areas where, especially the, downtown and what have you, if we've got people on the job and on the site, we've given them the right to have them do. I forget what it was called. They're limited to those three items, the modem replacement, power resets, and battery replacement. So we changed cable splicer helper to power cable support technician. Not big deals, but this is what the guys were looking for. Preference for power cable support technicians are given to power line technicians. However, should no power line technician apply for the job, electricians may be selected for these positions in accordance with Article 18E. And electricians working in this role will be paid the power line technician wage rate. They will be an electrician on leave, and they'll still be retaining their seniority as an electrician. We added area planner scheduler, machine operator one, mobile truck and transport vehicle tradesperson, and mobile utility truck and transport vehicle transfers and selections to be based upon merit, efficiency, and seniority. And we added mobile truck and transport vehicle transfers and classification, as well as a mobile utility truck and transport vehicle transfers and classification. You will see when you get the 98-page document, there's a ton of areas where we went in and tried to clean up, where we took out custodians and that kind of stuff. We eliminated a lot of the positions that are dormant, that we don't have anybody in, that they're no longer utilizing or they're contracting it out or what have you. But we also said that if they bring any of that work back, the job classifications, the job description, the duties will all be automatically put back in. We don't have to negotiate any different. It'll be as it was today. Compassionate leave, we defined immediate family. We're always getting questions about what is my immediate family. And we said it shall include spouse, common law spouse, children, stepchildren, foster children, parents, step-parents, foster parents, siblings, step-siblings, grandparents, grandchildren, parents-in-law, and children-in-law. Housekeeping, we're switching over into a lot of them. Four men, four women is now becoming four person. So we did the neutral language. We clarified the pole hauling language. We've incorporated regional foreman letter of understanding into the collective agreement as an MOU. We incorporated winders LOU into the collective agreement as an MOU and made a change that says any MOU or any winder that passes their certification will automatically become a regular employee because they work currently in the construction side. And then we modernized language around wildfires. No change in practice, guys. It's just the government has changed the wording of how they determine what's a wildfire. And then we deleted various redundant and outdated language. New MOUs, a new MOU for trades training instructors that allows for rotation in the field for trade skill retention. It allows for up to 2 months every 2 years. This is something that we've heard from our trades trainers that they would like to be able to do. Excuse me. It allows them to get back out into the field. It allows them to get experience with some of the new equipment that's out there, and it keeps them up to their skill retention and allows them to make sure that they're fully qualified when they're out training our people, that they're talking about the newest and best equipment that they've got available to them. A new MOU for Indigenous cultural leave that allows up to 2 days leave with pay per calendar year to participate in traditional Indigenous activities. And the parties have agreed to place the present gain-sharing MOU into the collective agreement. We talked with them about incorporating the MOU or eliminating the MOU and putting the wage rate into the collective agreement. So everybody got the same wage rate. Unfortunately, PSAC's formula that they wanted us to use said that we would take the average of the gain sharing over 5 years, but they were including the overtime into the wage rate for last year, which happened to be higher than the year before, and they didn't take it as an average over the 5 years. It dropped down significantly what we thought the rate should be, so we've said we'll stay with gain sharing and just put it in the collective agreement so we have it there as guaranteed. Surrey Central Stores, it always applied, but they never said it in this part of the agreement, but the employer may schedule the unpaid meal period by no more than one half hour in either direction. It says that everywhere else in the collective agreement. It applied there, but it didn't say it there. Language changes around non-red seals. The ITA sets a minimum program time requirement for red seal trades. The $10,000 penalty for apprentices was increased to $25,000. We've only had two people in the last 10 years take it. The company is concerned with the amount of money it's costing to put people through apprenticeships, that they don't want people to leave, and I don't think it's going to be much of a decentive to have somebody leave if they want to or if they have to, but it's there. Apprentices starting an apprenticeship must complete and graduate from that apprenticeship before they can bulletin into another apprenticeship. The company has full control over apprentices anyway, but they wanted that language there because they didn't want people to start an apprenticeship and think they could switch halfway through. The parties agree that Hydro will review the remote location measurement system prior to 31st of December 2024 and will utilize the Runzimer International or another similar firm to do the data collection. Now, a lot of people think that the remote incentive is not fair. Some of them that are in a low category should be a medium, some that are in a medium should be a high, and that there should be a couple of positions moved in. They've agreed to do the measurement system by 2024 and look to make the difference. We deleted trouble electricians. And that's the summary of the agreement. There's going to be other issues. And as we said, to go through all 98 pages and pick every single issue would be awfully time consuming. You will see all of them. If you have any questions, please get a hold of the office or one of your ABMs or one of the bargaining committee that was there, and they should be able to answer the question for you. Everybody is fully up to speed with what we've done, and it is coming with the unanimous recommendation to accept. Would we like to have done more? Absolutely. I think we got more than we were legally entitled to take out of the agreement, and we really need to pressure the BC Fed and other organizations to be lobbying the government to get rid of this PSAC mandate so we can actually go in and do free collective bargaining, which we've not been able to do since 1993. I think that's about all I've got, unless there's something else you can think of, Cody, that I needed to touch on.
Nope, I think you pretty much covered it, Garnet. Yeah, I'd like to thank you for running through this and, you know, facilitating and giving the explanation, especially